Hello and welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the news, but who do not claim to be experts. I just feel like a lot of these current affairs podcasts expect you, as a listener, to have a subscription to every newspaper and to be in with all the inside jargon all the time, and it's simply not realistic. So if you get a bit stuck on all that stuff and a bit lost, then this is the podcast for you. I'm Julia Bell, and today we're going to continue on with this little mini-series that I've been putting together, where I reach out to people in far-off patches of the globe whose governments have handled the pandemic particularly differently to ours. I like to compare experiences and get people's personal viewpoints. I'm not interested in talking to journalists or observers per se. I want to speak to people on the ground who have lived it and who feel it and who talk to friends and family and whatnot. And I just feel like doing that and getting kind of a perspective of other people's experiences gives you a better perspective of your own situation. Do you know what I mean? I think sometimes it's good to just get out of your own arse, to put it crudely, and to reflect on the fact that this has been a global issue that has had multi-layered impacts all over the place. So, in the spirit of that, I chatted to Fernando, who lives in Brazil. And the reason I wanted to talk to somebody in Brazil was because I keep hearing about how much of a disaster this pandemic has been out there. In fact, just this week, Brazil surpassed the grim milestone of 500,000 COVID-related deaths, making it the second highest in the world, of course, behind America, who have been hit the worst. But America also has a more successful vaccine rollout plan. There's kind of more of a light at the end of the tunnel feeling there. And their president, Joe Biden, again, to put it crudely, is just more concerned with the pandemic than the Brazilian president seems to be. Brazil is run by a man called Jair Bolsonaro, President Bolsonaro. He is described, I think it's fair to say by most, as a right-wing populist politician. If you're a bit stuck on this term populist, it is the best example of a populist is Donald Trump. He's like textbook, because the definition is somebody who appeals to the ordinary person, in inverted commas, and tells them, right, these career politicians that you're used to, they don't know you like I know you. They don't care about you like I care about you. They don't have your interests at heart. I'm the only one who can represent you against this elite, you know, against these establishment types. So Bolsonaro, in my opinion, and to be honest, in most people's opinion, pretty textbook populist, same as Trump. And like I say, when it came to the pandemic, he just really had no time for it, even at the very start.
No meu caso particular, pelo meu histórico de atleta.
In my particular case, with my athletic history, if I were infected with the virus, I would have no reason to worry. I would feel nothing, or at worst, a little cold or a little under the weather.
Devemos, sim, voltar à normalidade.
Some of these state and local authorities need to abandon their scorched earth policy.
Devem abandonar o
conceito blocking transport, closing businesses,
a proibição de transportes,
and mass confinement.
E o confinamento em massa.
So that was President Bolsonaro back in March 2020. So if you think about that time, we in the UK were all sitting in lockdown and we were set to stay that way for a long time. And he was already out in Brazil saying, oh, enough is enough. I think we've exhausted this now. Brazil is, you can't necessarily compare like that easily because Brazil is massive. So when he was talking, for instance, just before about how some of these state and local authorities need to abandon their lockdown policies, he was referring to the fact that he, as the president in the national government, hasn't actually been in control of the entire nation. Instead, each state has kind of handled how it wants to deal with the pandemic. And that has meant that there has been a certain level of discrepancy depending on where you live in Brazil, as to what you've been told to do and as to what you've had to do. I suppose much like America, in that sense. Each governor and each sort of state department has had a degree of autonomy. But there has still been massive pressure on Bolsonaro to take the reins and to roll out much stricter national restrictions across the entire country. For instance, people have been saying, please issue national government guidance to tell people to wear face masks. And he has not only refused to do that, he refuses to wear a face mask himself. So, you know, this is the attitude towards it all that he has. And, you know, like I say, I have been reading quite a lot about Brazil in our news. So yesterday I read that Brazil had set the new daily record for recorded COVID cases. The new daily record. And actually just this morning, I was reading a story in the Metro about how America is getting set to send 3 million vaccines to Brazil, kind of ASAP, because the situation there is so dire. And remember, it's getting into winter in Brazil, being south of the equator, and COVID-19 cuts even deeper in the winter months. So it's that bit more drastic at this time. But with all that said, how does it feel on the ground? Do people feel hopeless? Are people resigned to this new normal? Or, you know, is putting the economy above the pandemic actually a popular thing to do? How popular are the government after 18 months of COVID? Fernando was the man to tell me, and actually he has been a listener of mine for some time now, and we've had a fair bit of correspondence already, just in our DMs over the years. He's been actually very supportive. So I was really excited to speak to him and to get his perspective, because he is unbelievably informed. He knows as much about like Brexit as the next British person. So I knew that he would know his stuff, and he definitely didn't disappoint. And also, just to mention, it was horrific. We actually conducted this conversation 3 times. once a couple of weeks ago, but the internet connection was just so bad that the audio was unusable. And then we did it again yesterday. And at the very end, my laptop just went off. It just cut out. I have no idea why. And it didn't save our conversation. And then straight off the back of that, bless his heart, he kindly offered to just do it all over again. So the man has the patience of a saint. And considering he had to repeat himself, I actually learned a lot of new things every time we spoke. So I came away learning a lot. I hope you do too. Here's what we had to say.
Hi, hello.
Hi, for the third time.
Yes.
So where in Brazil are you at the moment?
I live in a city called Joinville in Santa Catarina State, which is in the south of Brazil.
And what is the COVID situation like where you are?
It's, you know, definitely pandemic fatigue has set in. So the number of cases and deaths are a lot, you know, are very big still. But, you know, people just don't care as much.
As in, there are rules in place and people just aren't listening to them?
There are recommendations in place, not rules.
Oh, really? So technically you can do whatever you want?
Yeah, no, nobody is going to, like, call the cops on you if you don't.
Okay. And what are the recommendations out of interest?
You know, just recently, just this year, the government has started to recommend wearing face masks, washing your hands, just to like leave your shoes at the door whenever you go to your house and things like that.
Leave your shoes at the door?
Yeah, that's not a Brazilian thing. We walk to our inside with our shoes on.
What has that got to do with COVID? What has taking your shoes off got to do with anything?
I have no idea. That's what they said.
Okay. Bizarre. And I think, you know, in our one of 3 attempts to having this conversation, you mentioned something about how actually the restrictions and the recommendations aren't rolled out from the national government. Each individual state decides what to do.
That is correct. Yeah. The health ministry just gives guidelines and recommendations, but actually, let's say if it were to happen a lockdown again, it's on the state government to decide whether that is a thing or not.
And how different have the different states' approaches been?
So it's actually more along party lines. So the states that are governed by people who are closer to the president tend to have the most lax recommendations ever. Whereas in São Paulo, who is, you know, also a right-leaning state, but actually the governor is very against the president, they have the tougher restrictions. Also because São Paulo is the most densely populated state in the union, and the São Paulo city is the most densely populated city in the entire of the Americas, I believe, even worse than New York City. So the recommendations over there are tougher.
Right. Take me back then to the start of this pandemic in Brazil. It's spring 2020. How did the Brazilian government, the national government, respond? What did they decide to do?
Okay, so the federal government only put in place land travel restrictions in March. But other than that, that's the only thing the federal government did. But state by state, we went into lockdown around that date. It was either March 17th or March 19th. And we stayed like that for a month and a half. You know, there was a really huge wave. We were seeing what was happening in Italy. We were seeing the remnants of what was happening in China, and people got really impacted by that. So a lot of the people were respecting the rules. But after that, after the first lockdown was eased, a lot of people were just like, okay, I'm not doing that anymore.
Why was the lockdown so short? 1 month? I mean, compare that to ours. We've been in and out of lockdown for like a year and a half.
I believe it was a political decision. Like, no politician wants to, you know, keep his population not working, not doing anything, which is something that really is against the Brazilian temperament. You know, we're very sociable and things like that. So nobody was actually going to keep it in place for, you know, for the time necessary or for longer. They were just, you know, let's lift it up as soon as we can.
So do you think actually it wasn't necessarily based on, you know, professional medical advice, we need to lift this lockdown? It's actually culturally, various state governments thought Brazilian people just aren't going to listen to these rules anymore.
No. There was advice, but the government itself, the governors themselves, decided not to listen. So we have a lot of capable people on board and who are in the government, but a lot of them just weren't listened to.
But why do you think that those governors didn't listen to that advice? But
pure political capital. So like nobody wants to take the hit due to COVID.
So for you, with that explanation, it's, you know, the public are always going to find it more of a popular decision if we lift lockdown. We want the public to support us, so let's lift lockdown, even though it's not advisable medically.
Yes.
How did you feel watching that? Because you know, you are connected on social media, you personally. You follow me on social media, so you've been keeping up with what's been happening in the UK. Surely your numbers were horrific. COVID numbers were horrific in Brazil. So were ours. And our government said, close society, stay in your homes until we can get a vaccine rollout going. And your state government's responses were to basically fuck it, let everyone back out. How did you feel as someone witnessing that happening?
How can I say this? It gives me great anxiety every time I turn on like local news. It gives me great anxiety. That's why I actually follow more, you know, news from other countries than my own. I can't deal with it anymore. It gives me great pain every day. So I limit myself to Brazilian news for like half an hour in the morning, just so, you know.
Microdose.
Yeah, definitely microdose.
And in terms of the situation now, how is the vaccine rollout going?
So Brazil is actually the fifth largest vaccination program in the world. So we have upwards of almost 40% of the population with the first dose, but with the second dose is upwards of 10 to 12% with the second dose of, you know, and one of three vaccines are being rolled out here. Either it's AstraZeneca, which is like people call it the Oxford vaccine, Pfizer, or Sinovac.
I've not heard of that third one. Where's it from?
It's actually in conjunction with the Chinese manufacturer. So they're rolling out this vaccine in countries like Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, Indonesia, Brazil, yeah.
And is there a kind of weird preference that people have about which vaccine they get?
Especially like from the past month, people are hunting. This is so ridiculous that I'm even saying this. I feel awful, but people are hunting the Pfizer vaccine. Yeah. especially in São Paulo, which is not like, it's very much decentralized. The vaccine applications, you have so many health clinics, government health clinics, that people like, okay, so they're giving out Pfizer in this one. Come here.
Wow.
Through WhatsApp. Yeah, that is happening.
Wow. I mean, to be honest, it's not that different here. People generally are taking the vaccines, but there is a narrative that there is a hierarchy of the vaccines, and kind of unofficially people are labeling which vaccine they want and whatever. Where does sort of the Brazilian narrative come from? Is it like a preference from where these vaccines originated, which country?
No, it's a preference from where it comes from. So like Pfizer is the, you know, the darling of the vaccines, and, you know.
Okay. What in terms of the general take up is it like? Is there a large anti-vax population in Brazil?
No, it's very niche. It's very niche. It has been growing because, as I said on other occasions, we're very pervious to, you know, marketing from, you know, from countries like the USA. So since anti-vax is huge there, it's making its waves over here. But it's not at all huge. A lot of people who talk trash about vaccines are going and getting vaccinated.
Right. I think, to be honest, I think the same thing here. I think there's some people that say, I don't massively love getting this, but this is what's standing in between me and going on my holidays. So I put it in my arm.
here is totally different. Here is like, I'm talking trash about the vaccines, but I'm not going to tell you when I'm going there, but I'm going there.
Ah, okay.
Better to be safe than sorry.
Right. Talk to me about President Bolsonaro. Has he been holding anti-lockdown rallies?
Yes, that is true, though I must say that the motivation of his most recent rallies, and by most recent, I mean a month back from now, has changed a little towards the presidential race next year, towards the next election. So he did, yes, hold anti-lockdown rallies for the better part of the first semester this year, yes.
But surely if his eyes are turned to a presidential campaign, and the election's happening next year, correct?
Yes.
Surely COVID is still a relevant conversation when it comes to a presidential campaign. Surely he's still talking about, look at all the, in inverted commas, good things that I've done. Vote for me again.
I would believe so, but the track record in Brazilian politics is so like recency bias oriented. I don't know if we get over the hump with COVID this year. I don't know if it will be much of a factor next year.
Really? It kind of sounds like, from the way you've been talking, and we have had this discussion three times, so I'm getting a handle on it. It kind of sounds like the way that you're talking is that people don't care about COVID as much over there as they do here, which surely they should, because you've just surpassed 500,000 deaths.
Yeah, they do, but they don't care about politics so much, you know?
Okay.
So we don't have like a Pew Institute research or a Gallup poll to actually gauge the population.
As in, you don't have as many polls and like indicators?
No, not at all. It's very niche. So we don't know actually what people are thinking of. You know, what I'm telling you is not like a majority thing, you know, it's very based on my location and the people I talk to, because, like, for example, Brazil is the fifth largest country in the world. So as I told you before, there are cities who have been very little affected by the entire of the pandemic in the last 2 years. And there are cities that have been massively hit.
Yeah. You told me a story before about your dad and where he lives and how... Well, go on.
Where he comes from. Yeah. So the city is a fisherman's village. So it's 8,000 people in the northeastern region of Brazil where all the cool beaches are. So over there, only 2 people died of COVID during the entire of the pandemic. So for them, it was actually pretty smooth sailing, and they were actually beneficiaries of the financial policies that the government put in place to try to make the population, the rest of the population, be afloat. So so they gave out like a 600 reais check, which would be like approximately $120. So that is a 60% of our minimum wage to, you know, roughly everyone who was unemployed and who is not registered with Social Security, so that they would have like income when they didn't have a job. So these people that were a little affected, they took that money as like free government money for me to spend.
Even though COVID wasn't really a threat.
Yes.
It's just such a weird thought, because the UK is so densely populated. Every square inch of this island pretty much has been accounted for. And so it was terrifying as soon as, you know, the first cases of COVID-19 washed up on our shores. We knew that this is a nationwide problem. If it's happening in London, it's going to be in Inverness in a week. This is how interconnected we are. But it's weird to imagine that Brazil's geography doesn't necessarily lend itself to a disease taking over the entire country in the same way.
Yep, exactly.
Bolsonaro, in terms of his personality, according to you, we were talking earlier, he calls himself the Trump of the tropics. And it sounds like some of his kind of attitudes towards COVID have been quite Trumpian, not necessarily taking it as seriously as he should, for example. Is he as divisive as Trump was in America? Do you have some people who die hard love him and other people who completely hate him? Is it a similar attitude?
Yes, it is. And I guess we're a lot more pervious to the marketing, you know, to the social media campaigns and the whatnot. We're a lot more subject to those campaigns. And, you know, a lot of the Brazilian population has a real difficulty in being like politically engaged, because it's a recent thing, but political engagement here in Brazil. So he is more divisive, yes. And we're more affected by, you know, other influences like WhatsApp groups and Facebook, you know, YouTube channels.
Misinformation.
Exactly. So it's a daily struggle to, you know, dispel misinformation.
And it's therefore like a lovely, bountiful breeding ground for someone who wants to take advantage politically.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that would be like a beautiful landscape for somebody who wants to dictate.
Most okay. Definitely. If Dominic Cummings were to come over, he'd be rich.
You can have him. He's yours. Let's get the man on a plane.
Yeah.
When you say that each state has handled this quite differently, and actually it's kind of based on party lines, whether it was really lax, because the government's party is pretty lax, or if it was the opposition party, in which case they've been a bit more restrictive. You told me a story about the leader of the Sao Paulo state government and how he actually said, no, I want to take COVID really seriously. I want to impose lockdowns. But that went down terribly with the public, right?
Yes, that is correct. And it's still going down terribly with the public because, you know, in Brazil, I guess that, you know, we live on a tighter edge than people generally do from like the UK or from America. We have less savings and things like that. So of course, you know, situation is really desperate over here.
I mean, I guess I never appreciated it like that. For us, it was like common sense. Yes, there's people absolutely on the poverty line, but it was common sense that if the doctors are telling you and if the public health experts are telling you to lock down, you lock down and the economic questions can come later. Whereas for you guys, it's no, I can't be out of my job for 1 week or I'll die. It's a bit more dramatic.
Yeah. Plus you guys have less people. It's like a basic maths problem. So we have 210 million people in our population and we have to deal with it. Also, the Brazilian currency has suffered the second greatest devaluation in the past 2 years, from 2019 until now. So we're only outperforming the currency from Zambia, I believe. We're worse than Turkey in terms of devaluation.
Why?
That's pure economic policy gone wrong. So for instance, for me to buy a pound, it would be worth 7 of my currency.
Oh my God. And you mentioned COVID fatigue before. When did that set in? Because here, people have been pretty patient with these restrictions for a year and a half. And I think every time there's been a lockdown, the vast majority of us have abided by those rules. And even now there's heavy restrictions, but the vast majority of us are wearing masks on public transport, we're socially distancing, whatever. The fatigue, though, is setting in now very much. And I think if the government were to turn around tomorrow and say, actually, you've got to go back into lockdown, I don't think people would do it. I think that's the last straw for us. I feel like I'm getting the impression in Brazil, the fatigue set in a lot earlier. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I would say after summer vacations, when, you know, countrywide, the restrictions got very laxed. There were recommendations like, don't make a huge Christmas party, only stay with your family. There were these recommendations, not rules. And people somewhat abided by it. But after summer vacations, you know, everybody was like, oh, whatever.
Your summer is our winter, so it's confusing.
March 2021, yes.
You said that Bolsonaro's running an election next year. Do you think he'll win it?
I think a lot of his supporters guarantee he'll win it, but I think it's too close to call.
Do you have a preference?
I actually am one of the few people who think that the Brazilian election system is a travesty because we are obliged to vote.
Really?
Yeah. So it's forced democracy, and I think that's not democratic, so I don't vote.
What happens if you don't?
You have to pay a fine, like a 20 pence fine.
20 pence, okay. So do some people just pay it? Pay the fine.
But I believe it's too close to call. I think that the left is going to make a comeback, but it's going to be like the United States. It's going to be very narrow, very narrow.
Okay. I adore you for taking the time again to do this with me. Thank you so, so, so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share a little bit about Brazil, and thanks for the podcast, which have been a really good listen, and all the best.
Oh, bless you. I'm going to save it right now. Thank you so much, Fernando. Have a great day.
No, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. So that was Fernando, the person on this podcast who has had to show the most patience. So I really appreciate him jumping on. And it was weird, actually, in one of our earlier conversations, he mentioned that Brazil is actually more than happy to let people in who want to visit from abroad, even though I fully expect that Brazil, considering the state of things, will remain on our kind of travel ban list, our red list, for as long as it takes to get them out the back of this situation. So even kind of on an international travel scale, it seems that Bolsonaro's government just aren't accepting the severity of the situation, I suppose. So yeah, I gave Fernando strict orders to look after himself, although I'm pleased to hear that he has been vaccinated. And listen, before I let you go, I mentioned a few weeks ago, and you probably could see it from my lovely laurel that is now sitting proudly on my logo, that I have been nominated for a British Podcast Awards in the Bullseye category. And when I saw the list of nominees, I decided to reach out to the other guys to have a listen to what they were putting together and to reach out, because we are all so different. Basically, the category is for smaller scale podcasts who are maybe providing for a more niche audience and who, I guess, according to the panel, are doing a pretty good job, which is nice to know. And so I've heard back from quite a few of them already, and I've managed to sit down actually with two of, I suppose, my competition, if you want to put it like that. And I had a great conversation with the makers of the Swim Out podcast, Hunter and Vicky. It's a podcast all about outdoor swimming. So, you know, swimming across the English Channel and swimming, you know, they have guests on who have swum around Manhattan, and it's like very niche, but very interesting. And you can hear what my competitors are all about. So this is them. Hello, how are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Bullseye finalist award person.
I know, that's us. Can you believe it?
It's so exciting. Is anyone else coming on today, Julia?
No, so I'm what I would love to do is I've reached out to everybody and I've said, I really want to introduce everyone else's podcast on my podcast, because they're all really good and they're also different. Because if there were any politics ones, I'd be like, maybe not. But because they're all so different.
Wild swimming, kind of, or, you know, long distance marathon. I think, who's the most niche of everyone? I mean,
I think maybe you guys. How did you two meet?
Swimming the Channel.
Ah, yeah. Is that a proper community then? Because it's so tough.
Well, yeah, it is, yeah. It's a bonkers community.
Well, yeah, pretty much on the right at the beginning of our kind of channel training journeys, really, and we had this kind of thing in common of both just basically loving radio and and also, I guess our thing was like, what we did this whole crazy, you know, channel swim thing, and realized there's so much more, and there's so many more stories involved in, you know, this like sport that we both feel so passionate about and love so much.
But also because we, we'd been very close while we swam the channel together, and we trained together, and we actually crewed for each other, and, you know, it was quite a sort of joint effort in many ways. And then when it's over, it's like, oh, so, you know.
Yeah, you always get a kind of drop in endorphins because you've got nothing to look forward to, so you wanted to create this project.
It's quite a famous thing. People say, like, when you swim the channel, you know, I mean, it's this, you know, huge thing that people spend, some people like spend their, you know, their lives like building up for this huge endurance thing. And it's like, you should be planning and preparing for what you do afterwards in a way, because it is this, you know, drop. But yeah, so we just kind of started this podcast, and we did it partly because we hated swimming podcasts. We decided that we didn't want to kind of do just one interview. We wanted to make it more like a radio show. It's pretty much half an hour every episode. And yeah, there's kind of like within that, three kind of major stories that we'll cover, or individuals who we're interested in.
But that's a lot of work to line up three. It's like a magazine show for a very niche topic. And, you know, with what I talk about, there's a whole world of possibilities for who I could speak to. For you guys, it's outdoor swimmers. That must be kind of hard work lining up all of it. It's a lot of work, right?
It hasn't been that much hard. Actually, the guests on the whole flow quite easily, and it's not like there's hundreds of people to choose from. So, you know, if you're kind of, you know, if you're working on ice swimming, you know, there's a certain group of people that you're going to head for.
I feel like with your community as well, people are willing to talk because people who are into it are massively into it. It's like a really passionate zone.
Yeah, yeah, you can't be sort of vaguely interested in marathon swimming.
You can't. People drown if they, And when you you crewed together, does that mean you basically kept each other alive when you're training?
Kind of, yeah. When you actually swim across the channel, you have a boat to support you, and then you've got the swimmer. So you've got a crew that feed you, and one of those crew members can also swim with you.
Wait, so how long are we swimming the English Channel? How long?
14 hours and 40 minutes in our cases.
So you need fed.
You need to
go to the loo
and hydration and everything. Yeah,
and you need to stay like awake and energized.
Yeah.
Oh Oh my goodness! Because when people run a marathon, what's the average time? Sort of 5 hours, isn't it?
Yeah,
and so you're swimming for 14. And what is it about? Do you kind of, because people talk about when they run, they go into a zone where they're not even thinking about the exercise anymore. They're just in this sort of euphoric brain space. Is that what you kind of have to enter in order to complete a 14-hour swim?
Hopefully.
It's like a meditative mind space.
Yeah. No, you're definitely in this kind of just in the state of flow where you're not really that kind of conscious. Like, you know, an hour can pass like, you know, in a minute almost. And, you know, we've interviewed these kind of mad people who have done things like swum the channel, you know, length to length four times continuously. And, you know, I remember asking this like woman who it took her something like 50 odd hours. She was swimming continuously. Like this woman called Sarah Thomas, like even her mother, who was like interviewed the next day, was like, my daughter is a freak of nature. You know, these are kind of incredible people. You know, it is super niche, but actually there's so many different angles to explore with it. And, you know, people swim for just all sorts of different reasons. I mean, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast was, you know, through hearing about a woman who swam across like the Bering Strait, which is like the coldest area of water. And she did it to kind of calm like Cold War tensions. So, I mean, people swim for like political reasons. They swim for like, you know, to save the planet, or they swim it because, you know, they're going through addiction or something. Like, in a way, it's not really even about swimming. It's about, you know, what people are trying to accomplish outside of, you know, abstractly in their life. So I guess, yeah, it's just the useful way of accessing like those sorts of stories that I think we love telling, like on our podcast.
All right, all the best. All right.
Have a good weekend.
There you go, Hunter and Vicky of the Swim Out podcast there. I've also chatted to a couple of the other competitors in my category who are all equally wonderful, and I'll try and share bits of those conversations as well in later podcasts. But I'll put a link to the Swim Out podcast in the episode description if you do fancy checking that out. If you are an outdoor swimmer, you'll love it because it's right down your street. Listen, for future episodes, you've got to let me know if you've got any questions. If you're curious about any other countries across the globe, then I can add to this little mini series. But if there's anything else happening in the news that you want to know about, don't hesitate to get in touch on social media at @JuliaBell_X. And if you like this podcast, if you want to help keep me going, the way to do it is to become a patron. It's basically like buying me a coffee, a really reasonably priced coffee. And it grants you access to loads of exclusive content, but it also helps you feel comfortable that every time you listen, you're keeping me going. And I want to thank everyone who is already a patron. It is literally thanks to you that I can do this podcast. So make sure you click the link in the episode description if you want to be a part of that. I love you guys so much. Thank you for listening. And big thanks to Fernando for doing that chat three times over. I will speak to you all in the next episode. Okay, goodbye.